Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought right here on the Weekly Worldview, where we're celebrating. Well, we're not going crazy. We're not flipping over cars and setting them on fire or anything, but we are celebrating the collapse of the socialist government in Holland. That's right. It's a positive sign. I said a few months ago that if the Dutch farmers don't stand up like men against this tyranny, then surely all is lost. And guess what? All is not lost. The Dutch farmers stood up and said the Dutch equivalent of no, whatever that is. And the socialist government there has, well, collapsed. I mean, they're not, it's not like they're burning the capital to the ground. I mean, it's not France, for crying out loud. It's just that the prime minister is going to have to resign and they're going to hold elections, and hopefully they'll elect some people who are not members of the criminally insane sex cult that have seized civilization. And we'll start to see some movement in the right direction. We can always hope for the best, right? Meanwhile, speaking of France, we go to the end of the world file, where Leon Gauthier, the last surviving member of an elite French unit that stormed the beaches at Normandy on June 6, 1944, has died. He was 100 years old. He and his comrades in the Kiefer Commando Unit were among the first waves of troops to storm the heavily defended beaches, beginning the liberation of Europe at the end of World War II. The commandos in the Kiefer Regiment, was it the Kiefer Red? The Kiefer Commando Unit. The commandos spent 78 straight days on the front lines. Of the 177 who went ashore on June 6th, just 24 escaped death or injury. Gauthier among them, and now he has passed. And it's a symbolic passing, as the, well, people have called it the greatest generation. I just call it the World War II generation. But it was a generation that had a lot more sane people. And they have virtually all passed from the scene at this point, leaving more and more baby boomers in charge, which is just troublesome. That's all. Okay. So, farewell to Leon Gauthier and the World War II generation. It falls to my generation to rescue the baby boomers from themselves. So hopefully we can pull that off. From France, we move to the justice file, where we stay in France, actually. According to a French digital rights advocacy group, what is a digital rights advocacy group? Well, that's people who want to remain anonymous online because of all the creepy, weird things they do online. This group is called, that's just in general. That's a generalization. I know that we all have the right to be secure in our papers and our persons, and I'm all for that. But La Quadrature du Net is a French digital rights advocacy group, which are almost all left-wing and are almost all perverts. Just so you know, not that I'm against privacy, but they are upset about a new bill in France that would give police in France the authority to secretly activate phone cameras, microphones, and GPS to spy on citizens there in France. Now, the new law, so the people who are proposing the new law say, wait, it only allows for remote spying when justified by the nature of the seriousness of the crime, and for strictly proportional duration, and only after a judge. Now I'm slipping into, what, going into like a Austrian accent. Can't hold a French accent for more than two sentences? I don't know what's going on. Only after for a strictly proportional duration, after a judge has approved the surveillance. Surveillance being one of our favorite French words. Surveillance. So only after a judge, and it's going to be proportional, and it's only in the case of crime. Lawmakers also insist that sensitive professions such as journalists, judges, lawyers, doctors, and ministers of parliament would not be legitimate targets of such surveillance. So, and then Zero Hedge goes on to remind us that since 2015, when terrorist attacks rocked France. I can't even read it. Because it wasn't terrorist attacks that rocked France. It was terrorists attacking. What's wrong with these journalists? They don't know how to speak English. This isn't even translated from French, for crying out loud. Terrorist attacks rocked France? No, terrorists rocked France. So, okay. But anyway, since 2015, when the terrorists attacked, the country has increased its surveillance powers. And so I don't want to upset my libertarian-minded friends out there in the audience, but the government does have the authority to investigate and to surveil and to spy in secret. The government has that authority legitimately. I'm sorry. Don't throw things at me. But the government sits in the place of God. God has delegated justice to the government, which means the government has the right to investigate, which they don't have to be open about. So they have the right to do all this, to secretly activate your phone, your camera, the GPS to follow you. So if you're involved in a crime, they can apprehend you. It's when the government abuses that power that they must be held to account. Like what's happening in Holland with the criminally insane sex perverts trying to shut down the farms. The farmers just rolled all their tractors into the Capitol and said no. Civil disobedience. So the government has the authority to do these things. When the government abuses that authority, we have to stand up and hold them to account. And we can hold them to account in this life, but maybe not, because they're the government. And they might crush us and throw us in prison and chain us in a gulag, kill us. But then they'll be held to account in the next life. The government, they'll all be held to account. So I can assure you of that. And so this is why Julian Assange should be executed. And the other one, Edward Snowden, and the other one who dresses in a dress. They should all be executed for what they did. Because the government has the legitimate authority to spy and surveil and to keep secrets and all of that. What we need is God-fearing men in government. That's what we need. We don't need the right to be anonymous online so that we can do whatever the pervs over at La Luce France, was this, France the Net. All right. Now, let's move on to, oh my goodness. Well, coming off the good news from Holland or the Netherlands, where the Dutch live, we move now to UFC 290, which is UFC, which is that's the sport where men beat each other senseless in an octagon-shaped chain-link fence-surrounded environ. They beat each other bloody and senseless until one of them gives up. And everyone around gets very excited about that. And so naturally, Donald Trump attended UFC 290, which I believe is the 290th rodeo. I don't know. It's not their first rodeo. It's their 290th rodeo over at UFC. Anyway, Donald Trump came in and the crowd went wild. And Donald Trump approached Mr. Joe Rogan himself with the founder of UFC, Dana White, at his side. Later on, as the crowd was going wild, barely able to restrain themselves, Donald Trump met with Mel Gibson and pretty much brought the house down. Nobody even cared about the fight. Guys were beating each other bloody and senseless in the ring going, hey, pay attention to us. Nope, everyone was paying attention to Donald Trump. This all happened in Las Vegas. And so I read this and I think to myself, is this the future of conservatism? Where vulgar, godless, prideful entertainers and dim-witted jocks are viewed as the people who are going to save America? Really? Joe Rogan? Are you kidding me? Okay. I know. Joe Rogan does have the ability to point out the fairly obvious. But I'm not going to trust him to save America, for crying out loud. Any more than I would Donald Trump or whoever this other bozo is. Dana White, he learned how to make a living selling tickets to watch men beat each other senseless. Wow, he's a real genius. All right. It's just sad to see. That's the politics file. That's what politics has degenerated to. So from there, let's go to the can't take it with you file for a lesson for all of us. I just read recently that the matriarch of the Cox Cable Empire, that would be Ann Cox Chambers, she passed away in February 2020 at 100 years old. Before she died, she distributed the shares of her organization to her three children who did not earn it. So the Cox family fortune is worth somewhere around $30 billion with a B, $30 billion. And grandma handed out the money to the kids before she died. Okay, so now the heir to the Cox Media Empire, one of the heirs, James Chambers, who also goes by the name Fergie, has announced that he's detached himself from the family business, cashed out, and he plans to use the wealth to support communism. Straight up communism. He doesn't even try to hide it. He says, quote, "I believe strongly that my primary material purpose on earth is to extract as much capital from the Cox fortune as possible in order to build socialist infrastructure and institutions in the 21st century on the domestic and international level," unquote. So he goes on. Quote, "As of Monday," this is Monday last, "I will be worth multiple hundreds of millions of dollars and I will continue to have a considerable income for the decade, for a decade or so to come." Unquote. He then goes on to say how he's building a network of comrades who will help him by holding him accountable to distribute the capital in a socialized manner. So him and his buddies are going to get together and they're going to figure out how to hand out the money to BLM and the trannies and Antifa and whoever else. So fund the riots, whatever he wants to do. And so this should be a lesson to all of us. So you can't take the money with you. And pretty much whoever you leave it to, it's going to probably hurt them if they haven't earned it in some way. So I'm all for leaving a fortune to your children in the form of a company, a business, something for them to do, something that they've earned their way into. I'm all for that, and I think that's biblical. But to hand a punk with a nose ring $1 billion, well, grandma, that was a mistake. And so now we've got to deal with James Chambers. The only positive potentiality here is there's a pretty good chance that he'll wipe out and kill himself because he's a moron. And so he'll end up, you know, fentanyl under a bridge somewhere, just as likely as establishing the next socialist utopia. He'll be bloated in the streets of San Francisco somewhere. So we can, as I said with the Dutch, we can always hope for the best, right? It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. No, let that roll for a little while, because that's very appropriate. We're headed down to Tennessee. That's right. We're headed down to Tennessee to hear from Representative Tim Burchett. He is a Republican. He's a member of Congress there out of Tennessee. He's a serious fellow. How do I know? Because he's talking to us about aliens! That's right. That's right. Representative Tim Burchett says he sits on a House committee that's investigating UFOs. And if you get a committee together to investigate UFOs, the one thing you can guarantee, they're going to find some UFOs. And some aliens, too. And now, Representative Burchett, very serious fellow, he says that there have been government cover-ups probably since about 1897. Uh-huh. You all thought it only went back to Roswell? Oh, you don't know the half of it. I'm on the committee. Uh-huh. Since about 1897. That's right. He says we know about craft, I said, that can travel light years. How about that? Think about that for a second. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Light years. Mm-hmm. And they can fly underwater. They can fly underwater and they don't even show a heat trailer or nothing. They just zoom underwater. That's right. And by the way, these aliens, they're so advanced, they could turn us into a charcoal briquette if they wanted to. Mm-hmm. We're out of our league. There's no way we could fight them off even if we wanted to. That's how bad it is, and they've been covering it up, by the way. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, because these aliens, now they could just kill us in a second, but they hadn't. How come? Well, I don't think they're a threat. I don't think they're a threat to us, and so I'm not sure why the government's covering it up. If they was a threat to us, they'd have done killed us. So it's time for the government to just come clean. Let us know about the aliens, dang it. Well, it's time they come. We need to know.
Then what?
Well, then we'll know.
We can fight, right?
Here's the thing. Is the government has been using their technology and their knowledge and keeping it away from us. So they keep us all enslaved using this alien technology. Where do you think the internet came from? Huh? You think that stupid kid built Facebook? No, there's aliens involved. Who do you think taught us how to bake bread? You think some human figured that one out? Uh-uh. That's aliens. All right. Now, let me finish with Mr. Tim Burchett. Give us all the information and let the American public decide. At which point my extremely attractive audio engineer said, "Well, decide what?" What should we decide? Anyway, he was appearing on the Event Horizon podcast, okay, which I'm not familiar with that. I encourage you to go check it out, though. I'm sure it's quite entertaining. Now, let's keep in mind that Representative Tim Burchett is a congressman from somewhere outside of Knoxville, Tennessee, where, if I'm not mistaken, if you can buy a jar of moonshine for about 40 people, you can swing an election. Outside of Knoxville, Tennessee, in a congressional district. So now I know he's a very serious fellow. How do I know that? He has a BS degree in I'm serious. He has a BS degree in education. You can read that on his congressional. Says BS degree. So anyone who accepts a degree that asserts that education is somehow a science is obviously. Well, I'm just gonna leave it at BS, and we'll just let that speak for itself. So anyway, we must not assume that Representative Burchett or anyone else ranting and raving about aliens are worthy of our attention. Okay, and I really don't know what the point is. I really don't know. But I think an awful lot of people just get some sort of thrill out of thinking they'll be the ones to break the big news about the aliens. I mean, that would be big news, right? If there were aliens, especially since it's not possible. But so if it happened, it would be big news. And so who wouldn't want to break that? Everyone knows it's going to be Tucker Carlson. Come on, Mr. Burchett. Don't even try. You know Tucker's going to get that scoop. All right. Meanwhile, all right. So that's been fun. Now, this is not fun. We get to the Just a System file. The Just a System file where CBS News Channel 12 in Florida is reporting out of Lake Worth Beach that John Dimming, a 33-year-old married man, has been charged with attempted murder and aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. So what happened was Dimming caught another guy in bed with his wife. And so he grabbed a baseball bat and he beat the guy until his wife pulled him off the guy. Yeah. So what happened was the victim here is the guy seducing the other guy's wife. He's presented in the story as the victim. Well, that's because he was struck about the head and shoulders with a baseball bat. So he is a victim of sorts. He's a victim of being hit in the head with a baseball bat. He told deputies that he had gone out for drinks with Deming's wife, and then somehow they ended up back at his Airbnb, and the victim was in bed with the wife, and Deming charged in with a baseball bat, pinned the victim to the ground, and struck him at least three times with the baseball bat. At one point, he was heard to say, "Don't ever go near my wife again." That's a quote. Quote, "Don't ever go near my wife again," unquote, as he struck the man with the baseball bat. An investigator on the scene asked the victim what he thought would have happened if the wife hadn't intervened and pulled the husband off him. And the victim said, "I think he would have beaten me to death. I felt like he was out to kill me." Yeah, you think? this guy might have a degree. Pretty smart guy. So maybe the aliens clued him in that, yeah, you get caught with a guy's wife, he might kill you. Yeah. So when Deming found out that this guy had taken his wife back to the Airbnb, why did he grab a baseball bat? It was because he could not grab a phone and call the police and say, "Hey, there's a guy, he's seduced my wife and he's taken her back to a hotel." And that the police could go down, the police, they would just laugh. What would they do? They would be like, "Why are you calling us?" They might as well say, "Why don't you grab a baseball bat?" Because the police won't do anything. And so because the police can't investigate adultery and seduction, Mr. Deming grabbed a baseball bat. And so who should be on trial here? Not Mr. Deming. You know who should be on trial here? Is the system of laws governing the state of Florida, where this guy lives. They should be on trial, and there should be a change. And to prevent people from being killed in situations like this, which easily could have happened here. That easily someone could have been killed. And that's a public health emergency, for crying out loud. So the law needs to be changed so that if a man seduces another man's wife, that the husband can call the police so that he doesn't feel like he's going to just go kill him, which he's got every right to feel that way, by the way. Now, he doesn't have the right to act out on it. And so perhaps Mr. Deming shouldn't be on trial because the law's a mess. If the law was properly constructed, Mr. Deming should be, yeah, then he would be in trouble. But, all right, so that's the just a system file. What does the system produce? It produces murder and mayhem and adultery and chaos. And an industry around managing all of that. An industry in which the captains of that industry do very, very well. Now, let's go to the politics of murder file, where we check in with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is running for president of the United States. LifeSite News reports that RFK Jr. does not like abortion. He says, quote, "I think the worst solution to abortion is that the government is involved in decisions that belong to a woman," unquote. Oh, I'm sorry. I got it backwards. RFK Jr. likes abortion. He's okay with abortion. He doesn't want the government involved. He doesn't want the government getting involved in judging the murder of innocent people. That's the last place the government needs to be, according to RFK Jr. He says he's for, he says he stands for medical freedom and for bodily autonomy. And nobody's worked harder for that than him. And he says that applies to vaccines, especially the vaccines, which is, he's running for president. So here's how bad the vaccine situation is, ladies and gentlemen. Now, nobody wants to say this out loud. And of course, if you watch the regular mainstream media, you wouldn't realize that everybody and their brother knows that the vaccines are a disaster. Everybody knows it. It's just that the king has no clothes and nobody's allowed to say it. But everybody knows it to the point where RFK, who was pretty much considered a crackpot 3 years ago, he's a legitimate contender for the Democrat nomination because of the disastrous vaccine rollout and all the people who've been injured and killed. It's just horrible. But RFK Jr., he's against the government forcing people to take vaccines, but he's not for the government intervening in the murder of innocent people, which tells you that RFK is quite confused. He says, here's a quote, "I don't think the government has any business telling people what they can and cannot do with their body." Okay, well, okay, now, Mr. Kennedy, I'm sure Kennedy has a degree. He might even be a lawyer. And he's definitely a smart guy. But Mr. K, RFK Jr., the government has an obligation to restrain the criminal use of your body. The government has the obligation to restrain the criminal use of your body, including crimes like adultery and fornication, which are the driving force behind abortion. And of course, abortion is using your body to murder another person. That's not your body, Mr. K. Jr. RF. I think you're smart enough to know that. I mean, you've been to college. You know what I think about Robert F. Kennedy Jr.? I think if Robert F. Kennedy Jr. had a genuine epiphany and came out as anti-abortion, I think Robert F. Kennedy would be the next president of the United States. That's what I think. If Robert F. Kennedy could get his act together and get all of his brains in one contiguous, undivided, unconfused state, Robert F. Kennedy could be the next president of the United States. If Robert F. Kennedy was against abortion, I could forgive just about every other thing I disagree with him on. Because just about everything else I disagree with him on is really about money. And with money, I'm willing to negotiate. So when it comes to money and policies about taxes and whatever. But if he came out against abortion, not only would I vote for him, I think that a significant majority of Americans would vote for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. So that's my advice to the RFK campaign, but it's not campaign advice. So I don't want him to do George W. Bush and just act like you're a Christian just to get the gullible evangelical vote. My advice to the RFK Jr., not to the campaign then. My advice to RFK Jr. personally, from me to you, is understand and come out in support of the inalienable right to life of every single person. And you will be the next president of the United States. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for joining us this week at the Weekly... What's that?
He's an abortionist.
Oh, John Bon Jovi's a pro-abort.
Sure.
Yeah, all of them are pro-aborts. Just about everything. So from there, we go appropriately to the baby killers file. Baby killers.
Wow,
yeah, there's a file now. Not to put too fine a point on it, but abortion is a euphemism for killing babies. So we just call baby killers here. Up in Seattle, there is a university, the University of Washington. And the University of Washington now has a new vending machine stocked with ibuprofen, pregnancy tests, and the morning after pill, which is an abortion pill that kills babies. So that's right. Well, let me just get back to the story because I don't want to get ahead of myself. AP, this is from the Associated Press. They report, listen to this. With some states enacting abortion bans, huh? Which is totally ridiculous. So you have, well, all right, I'll just leave it aside, okay? I don't want to beat a dead horse. The AP says there are now 39 universities in 17 states with emergency contraceptive vending machines. Emergency contraceptive, they call it. It's a baby-killing pill. It's designed to kill a baby if a baby occurs. Yes, it's designed to quite possibly prevent a baby from occurring, but it's also designed to kill the baby if the baby occurs, which is not contraception. That's baby killing. And that's now in about 40 colleges. 20 more are considering the abortion pill vending machines. Over-the-counter purchase of Plan B. Now, listen to this. This is from the Associated Press, which is a reliable news source. Over-the-counter purchase of Plan B and generic forms is legal in all 50 states. Gee, now where is that abortion ban that the AP just was? Some states enacting abortion bans, blah, blah, blah. Well, if over-the-counter abortion pills are legal in all 50 states, it's kind of hard to say there's a ban. What you have is Republican politicians pretending to ban certain abortions in certain situations in order to make money and enrich themselves and to get votes and donations. And you have pro-life industry organizations promoting so-called bans on certain types of abortions in certain types of situations at certain times, as certain criteria are met, and then they send out fundraising letters and they make money, and then they donate money to politicians who then act like all of this is anything less than despicable. That you would have abortion pills in vending machines on college campuses is despicable and horrible. George Washington is rolling in his grave. He can't believe. Even Jefferson and Franklin are shocked. So, by the way, how much is it to kill a baby? It used to be several hundreds of dollars in cash that you had to go to pay Planned Parenthood in order to butcher your child, surgically mutilate and butcher the child to death. That's what you used to have to do. Now, for as little as $7 a dose, you can get a pill that will kill your baby. Hey, but we're winning. We overturned Roe. Yay! Let's celebrate. $7 abortion pill. Despicable, despicable, despicable. All right, now, before I go on, speaking of despicable, I want to address the despicable reviews of the movie, The Sound of Freedom. Now, I have not seen the movie because I just don't go see movies. But my family bought 5 tickets for the day of for July 4th. We bought 5 tickets. We didn't go because we just don't go. But we wanted to buy the tickets because we support the cause of conservative people exposing wickedness in high places. Why do we support that cause? Because we believe what the Apostle Paul said, that our battle is not against flesh and blood, but it's against principalities and powers in high places. And Sound of Freedom is about, well, they call it child trafficking. I'm going to get to that. You can call it child trafficking if you want, but that's too tame of a description. What the movie is about is the mass kidnapping, rape, and enslavement of children. That's what it's about. And while it's not as big an industry as the worldwide industry of baby killing, it's bigger than you might think. And it reaches into the lives and the daily work of people at the highest reaches of power and prestige. And they don't want the facts of their perversion coming out especially before they've legalized it, which they're working on legalizing all the creepy stuff they do. But anyway, the reviewers, the leftist reviewers, are calling Sound of Freedom a QAnon fantasy because it presents a reality that we've all heard about, but nobody's ever actually connected the dots to how big it is, and everyone who's trying to connect the dots, they're involved in QAnon conspiracies and they're dismissed as crazy people. And by the way, I'm convinced that, so the term QAnon, it originates, I know that there's the story that it started in the 4chan chat room, and it was basically it was almost a serial fictional, I don't know what you'd call it, but an event that happened in a chat room. But QAnon, it comes from the idea that, basically the idea of QAnon is that there's one or more people in the government who hold top secret clearance, which in certain departments, civilian departments, it's called a Q clearance. So there are certain people who are secretly working on a plan to oust the criminally insane sex cult that seized the government. That's what QAnon is. People think that there's a bunch of top secret guys who are just waiting to pounce and throw Barack Obama and all the other sex perverts out of power. And I hope they're right. Frankly, I have my doubts. I have my doubt. But I will tell you that a common theme, when you go to try to find out what QAnon is, a common theme in all the mainstream depictions and definitions and descriptions of QAnon is the following. Quote, QAnon is a completely unfounded, baseless, with no apparent foundation in reality, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, they just immediately say that it's baseless and it's unfounded. It's like whenever they talk about the 2020 election, they always say baseless claims that the election was tampered with, or baseless claims of, well, wait a second. These mainstream descriptions always go on to talk about how, you know, there's some guy named Q and he's leading the forces for good against the evil, and they're going to expose Satan worshiping pedophiles in the government, in business, and in the highest institutions in the land. And they're going to overturn them and restore America. And so the part that I paid attention to was the idea about Satan worshiping pedophiles in government, business, and at the highest levels in all the institutions. There's no doubt that's true. There's no doubt that's true. I mean, I don't know if they actually light the pentagram on fire and sacrifice virgins. I don't know how deep their Satan worship is. But there's no doubt that there's a bunch of evil pedophiles in the government, the business, and the highest institutions in the land. There's no doubt about all that. Is there some secret organization to oust them? Anyway, I would just say across the board that the leftist definition of QAnon goes a bit too far out of its way to introduce QAnon as baseless before they've offered any evidence. And if there's one thing I've learned since the coronavirus hysteria, is that I'm immediately suspicious of anyone telling me anything is baseless before they've shown me why it's baseless. If they start out with, this is an untrue, unfounded, well, wait a second. How about just tell me the allegation and then show me why it's untrue? But if you start with baseless, already I don't trust you. Don't tell me it's baseless without evidence, because now I'm suspicious, just like I'm suspicious of anyone who claims to be following the science. Before they say what the science is, they insist they're following the science. Well, hold on a second. What science? Yeah, I'm just so suspicious, that's all. Anyway, I've got some friends and people I love who are I'm not going to say they're QAnon conspiracy theorists, because that's not what they are. They're just people who wish someone could save America, and they're desperate for someone to save America. And I think QAnon springs from the innate knowledge that we all have that eventually the truth wins out. Eventually the truth wins. And I've been asserting that the government and the institutions, by the way, are governed by perverts and criminals for well over 20 years. Way before QAnon was even cool, I've been asserting that the schools are full of pedophiles and child molesters and that the government's full of criminals. Way before Q. But I've always asserted that it's up to us. Not Q. Not somebody at the CIA. Not somebody buried deep in the Department of Energy. It's up to us, the Christians. We're the only ones who can dislodge the principalities and the powers in high places. We're the only ones who can save America. We're the only ones who can turn out the criminally insane gang of perverts that seize the government. We're the only ones. And by the way, we have to do it in our own life first. So we have to overturn the principalities and the powers and the wickedness in high places. We have to do that in our own life first. Then in this world, in the sense of our circle of influence, well, our family, our circle of influence, and then our community. Oh, I hate that word. Our town, our city, our village, and then the state, maybe the country, maybe not. But you make those efforts starting with yourself and your own family first. And so you make that effort in this world, and then you make that effort in the next world. How do you make that effort in the next world? By preaching the gospel. So I'm not waiting for Q to crawl out from the underneath the Department of Energy and overthrow the wickedness and the principalities and powers in high places. I'm preaching the gospel because that's what's going to change and overturn the principalities and the powers in the next world. And by the way, the next world lasts a lot longer than this world. The next world is forever. So overturn wickedness in your own life, then your family, then your town, as much as you can all the time. And preach the gospel. Don't think Q is going to come and save you. Don't think Donald Trump is going to save America, for crying out loud. You know, the difference between what I've been saying for 20 years and the average QAnon follower is that I never thought I could go watch NASCAR and the Super Bowl and that Q would take care of everything. I just sit back and Q's got it covered. No. Q don't got it covered. No, that's up to you and me in Christ. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Now, we want to check in real quick. Now that I've got that off my chest, so I go from QAnon to the Queering of America. This is my Q of A file, the Queering of America file. We'll check in with Glenn Greenwald, who is a queer. And I'm not calling him a queer like I'm a bully or something. He says he's a queer. He's very loud about it.
He's a Q, too.
He's a Q. He's cute. Oh, yeah, in the sense of a queer. Okay. I hadn't put those two together. QAnon. Oh, no. It's worse than we thought. Glenn Greenwald, let's see, this is according to Based Politics, which I can't, this is one of my right-wing alternative news sources. I can't really vouch for. Well, I go check it out. Make up your own mind. I'm certainly not going to restrict free speech. But Glenn Greenwald, they say, is a gay journalist. Okay, right off the bat. I mean, I told you he's a queer. He leads with it. They lead with it. Everybody leads with it. He's a staunch defender of free speech and liberal values. And all of that, they say, has created a perception that he has moved right. But he says, no, I haven't moved right. I haven't changed my views. After all, he's still a queer and all. He says the world around him has changed. And the LGBT movement has changed. Greenwald said that the idea of the earlier gay movement was, quote, about very little other than the principle that adult Americans have the absolute right to decide for themselves what constitutes fulfillment and self-actualization and happiness in their lives, and what choices they make about their sexual lives and their family lives, unquote. Was that actual tape? That sounded exactly like him. That was pretty good. Greenwald goes on, it's no business of anybody else, not the governments, not your neighbors, not your state, not your city, and that the role of all those entities is not to interfere in your life and try to control it. At which point he calmed himself down. Yeah, he calls it a libertarian ethos. And he points out that in the 90s, that libertarian ethos became a very appealing principle for Americans who have a live and let live mentality, unquote. He talks about how the early gay rights movement sought to humanize and normalize gay men and women and to destigmatize their disgusting, perverted lifestyle. Once these demonization stereotypes were combated, which is what I just said, filthy, disgusting, perverted, that's all. That's right. They were fighting against that type of thing, making it so you couldn't say that in public. And they succeeded, by the way. He says, once these demonization stereotypes were combated, you know, about gays being, you know, threats to children and the like, all those lies. He said, after that, people began to look at gays as human beings and not these cartoon caricatures. And so Glenn Greenwald is talking about the enormously successful homosexual movement in the 1990s that won the culture war, basically. Greenwald goes on, he says, it was not that difficult to convince Americans that there was no reason to have the government constraining the lives of their gay neighbors. Unquote. I believe that's what happened with the LGBT movement. And what's happened now is they're saying, we're going to force you to live your life the way we want. And we're going to force you to let us teach your children to affirm ideas that you don't believe. Not going to tolerate any dissent. Unquote, says Glenn Greenwald. He says, this is where the gay rights movement has gone too far. He says he was all for it. He was a part of it. He has benefited from it. But now he says they're pushing it too far. That's right. He says the modern trans, I don't even know what you call it anymore. Is there a name for it now? LGBTQI, trans, I don't know. Whatever you call it. I always called it the faggots. So the modern faggots now say dissent is a hate crime or something that deserves violence. Because we're so righteous, unquote, says Glenn Greenwald. Glenn described today's LGBT mob as feeling like, quote, we have all the force on our side and we have all the power, unquote, says Glenn Greenwald. And so some of us were shouting from the rooftops in the 90s and the early 2000s, don't even let them out of the closet, because they're fascist maniacs. They're criminals, first of all. They participate in criminal, disgusting, sociologically toxic behavior. and they will destroy civilization just like they've destroyed civilizations before us. And we were just called haters. You hate, hate, hate. And so Glenn Greenwald now is perceived as a conservative. The guy who started it. One of the guys who was at the foundation of what has become the insane, criminally insane pile of sex perverts that want to seize your children right in front of you. And Glenn's allowed to talk about how they went too far. Glenn, you always went too far. And we should have never let you out of the closet. All right. And I'm not counting on Glenn to help shove it all back in the closet, for crying out loud. Now, we go from the culture war to the war, just regular war file, where we check in Washington, D.C., a young man named Nasrat Ahmad Yar. He worked for the U.S. government in Afghanistan for nearly 20 years, starting at the age of 10 years old, working his way up to becoming an interpreter for U.S. forces in Afghanistan. He survived the collapse of the Afghan government and managed to escape, falling into the hands of the Taliban, and fled to the United States in 2021. Wow. The guy could write a book, I'm sure. Just after midnight last Monday, while driving a Lyft in Washington, D.C., Nasrat Ahmad Yar was surrounded by four teenagers and then shot and killed. He was carjacked, then shot and killed. Survived Afghanistan. 20 years of war he survived. Survives the collapse of the government. Comes to Washington, D.C., murdered driving a Lyft. And by the way, the district attorney there made a comment when asked about the concerning rise in juvenile crime in the D.C. area. And he said it's just kids being kids. So this is the district attorney. Says kids are just being kids. They're murdering people. Carjacking and murdering people in the streets. So, and I got the story from the Washington Examiner. And the Washington Examiner places their obligatory blame on this Democrats. The Democrat D.C., Democrat Attorney General, the Democrat Mayor, the Democrats. They always do that. So, but it's far worse than just the Democrats. It's far worse than that. If it was just the Democrats, I mean, there would be a lot more hope and a lot more avenues of approach to start solving the problem of criminal justice in America. The problem of criminal justice producing murder. That's the criminal justice system manufactures murder. It's an industry, and it's way worse than the Democrats. Because the lawyers, the Republicans are just another pile of lawyers on the other side, allegedly, on the other side of the bar. They're not on the other side. They're not actually on the other side. They're both playing both sides from the middle, if that makes any sense. And I'm not sure it does, but it's all very frustrating. So it's hard to think clearly. Now, from the Just a System file, we go to Des Moines, Iowa, the heartland. Des Moines, Iowa, where an Iowa teenager has pleaded guilty to beating his Spanish teacher to death with a baseball bat. What was the reason? She gave him a bad grade. The teacher gives this kid and his friend a bad grade, so they plot for 2 weeks, catch her in the park, and beat her to death. And the student cut a deal. The student. Did I say student? I apologize. Well, he is a public school student. Anyway, the murderer struck a deal with the disgraceful lawyers. The sentencing hearing. He's been sentenced, by the way, to life with parole after some time. They say 35 years, but, you know, that's not, you know, it's all negotiable once we've secured your life. Pretty much work out anything after that. The sentencing hearing lasted more than 7 hours as the disgraceful, horrible, awful lawyers who struck the deal with this killer, these horrible, detestable human beings, allowed the victims to speak one after the other after the other how their lives had been destroyed and ruined by these murderers. And the lawyers and the filthy lawyer in the robes and the filthy lawyers in the courtroom allowed all these victims to speak in lieu of actually receiving justice. And it's just despicable. This little bastard and another murderer beat Nohema Graber, 66-year-old Spanish teacher, beat her to death in the park where she went for her regular afternoon walk. They caught her and beat her to death with a baseball bat. This is in Fairfield, Iowa, a city of 9,000 people, southeast of Des Moines. This is the heartland. That's the state of the heartland of America. And you wonder, could it be true that the highest levels of authority in the government and in industry and in all of our institutions and entertainment, is it possible that it's a bunch of Satan-worshipping maniacs? Well, look what's happening in the heartland. Okay, meanwhile, dial it down a little bit. We'll go to the smell test file, the smell test, because this didn't pass the smell test, right? So I logged on to my Yahoo email account, which is an alternative account that I use for things in my work. And so every time I log into Yahoo, I get to see the Yahoo News feed, which is the Associated Press, which is the standard left-wing grist every day. So it helps me to connect with the average, vacuous leftist falling aimlessly through time and space. I get to check in with them several times a day, and I saw this headline. Extreme heat wave bound for Phoenix could be the worst ever. Ever. And so you read a headline like that, and you're like, well, wait a second. The worst heat wave ever? That doesn't sound like a credible statement because, like, we don't know ever. We haven't been keeping temperatures in Phoenix forever. It's the worst ever. Anyway, it seems a little hyperbolic to me. Anyway, so you start to read this, and what's going to happen now is all the vacuous morons read this headline, and then they go on about their lives, entertaining themselves and being affluent and comfortable and making themselves more comfortable as they go through the weekend. And then next week, it's going to get really hot. And everyone's going to remember, I heard this might be the worst ever. And they're all going to be talking to each other. I think this could be the biggest heat wave ever. Uh-huh. You read down in the story, it's from MSN.com. MSN.com. Red flag. Okay. The Southwest United States is about to endure a heat wave that could rank among its worst in history, both for intensity and longevity. It's going to get hot for like a week. That's never happened before. It could go on for 10 days. Anyway, notice the qualifiers. So the key word is worst, by the way. That's what they wanted. That's in the headline, and that's in the very first sentence of the story. Because they know how stupid people are, and if you get them to read worst twice and then it gets really hot, they're going to be like, yeah, it's the worst ever. Anyway, this story was pushed out to anyone online for even a few minutes for at any point over Friday, Saturday. Anyway, everybody saw this. And it was on the local weather. They were flogging it. Oh, it's going to be so hot. It's unbelievable. It could hit 115. Really? 115 in Phoenix? Has that ever happened before? I don't think so. I think this might be the worst ever. And so as they prepare everyone for, I don't know. I think the climate is going to be the next. It's going to be their next coronavirus event. So where they're going to try to manufacture a hysteria. I don't think they could do that again. I think it was the perfect storm. It had been 100 years since the Spanish flu. And so a lot of reasonable people thought it was reasonable that there might be something really horrible about to happen because, you know, history and algorithms. And so I don't think they could do it again. They start telling us that it's the hottest ever and whatever, the power goes out in Southern California for 3 days and try to make everybody go crazy. I don't know what they're going to try, but the criminally insane sex perverts who've seized the government are hell-bent on keeping power and lording it over us. I can assure you of that. All right, now speaking of them, one of the persons atop that pile is Hunter Biden, and an amazing story, a story this past week, literally out of a James Bond novel, is this story, and you can't find it anywhere except the crackpot alternative right-wing media where all the QAnon people go. It's the only place you can find this story, but it's absolutely true. American-Israeli energy expert Gul Luft accused the Department of Justice of maliciously targeting him to protect Joe Biden, and he did it online on Wednesday. Luft said in a video statement that he had provided evidence of Biden family corruption to the FBI and DOJ in March of 2019. That's before Joe Biden announced he was running for president. This guy hears Biden's running for president. He's like, I got to tell the FBI and the DOJ, this guy's a crook. So he goes and he tells him he's a crook and he gives him all kinds of credible evidence. And after that, he hears nothing from the Department of Justice. That is until they arrest him in Cyprus and accuse him of being a gun dealer. They accuse him of being an arms dealer. He met with six people from the DOJ and FBI in Brussels in March of 2019. It's all documented, and he names names, by the way. He names names of everyone who was there, and he has proof that they were there. One of them was Special Agent Joshua Wilson of the Baltimore FBI field office, and coincidentally, Wilson's signature was on the subpoena authorizing the FBI to confiscate Hunter Biden's laptop from that computer repair store in Delaware. Huh. Interesting. Anyway, Luft said that he was arrested in Cyprus in February and was awaiting possible extradition to the United States when he escaped. I'm telling you, it's like a James Bond novel. The guy has to escape the Americans because they're gonna put him through a show trial and lock him up in a gulag for the rest of his life. And by the way, speaking of the gulag, the January 6th people, it all makes sense now. So I've been wondering, what's the government's interest in locking all these relatively innocuous patriots who were wandering around the Capitol? Even if they broke windows, lock them up for 2 years with no charges or what's the government's interest? Now it makes sense to me. One of them inside said the government wants them to say Donald Trump made us do it, and they won't sign the paper that says that. Because if they could get a half a dozen of them to turn and say Trump made us do it, then they could charge Trump with insurrection. And so now it all makes sense. It's the level of corruption, naked, broad daylight corruption that's visible every day in our government. It is it's a bit scary, actually. And it tells us how much we have ahead of us in the realm of pulling down principalities and powers and wickedness in high places. There's a lot of work to be done yet, that's for sure. And so we're here to do it. And while we do it, we should be serious. But then also there are times when we can laugh. And one of those times is whenever Kamala Harris opens her mouth. Kamala Harris was at some sort of leftist event at which leftists were telling other leftists how great they are. And then how wonderful and good they all are. And it had something to do with culture. So someone asked Kamala Harris her thoughts on culture. How would you define culture? What do you think culture is, Kamala? Please enlighten us. You're so great. And so Kamala answered and she said, culture is... culture is... It is a reflection of our moment and our time, right? And present culture is the way we express how we are feeling about the moment. And we should always find times to express how we feel about the moment. that is a reflection of joy because, you know, it comes in the morning. We have to find ways to also express the way we feel about the moment in terms of just having language and a connection to how people are experiencing life. And I think about it that way too. Unquote. You don't understand. That's the point. That's the point. Nobody understands. She's obviously out of her mind on drugs because nobody could string that many nonsensical words together and they're sober. It's just not possible. By accident, you would make some sense. All right. Meanwhile, reason number 667, keep your kids out of college. The other 666 should be obvious. So we're going to... Here's reason number 667 to keep your kid out of college. Out at Stanford, Stanford is creating a new curriculum for a new English class that examines Taylor Swift's songwriting over the course of her career. Uh-huh. That's right. The curriculum will draw parallels between the writings of Taylor Swift and classic works of literature and poetry. So, if you thought having to study Taylor Swift's lyrics was bad enough, imagine that combined with other poetry. You don't even want to get anywhere near that, for crying out loud. All right, so that's reason number 667. To get or keep yourself or your kids out of the government schools, is there anything I want to... I don't know that I have time to close with anything, do I? So you think so? All right, science, this is from the Science Really file, where scientists say, but which means it's credible, the first word in the article, scientists. Scientists have made a groundbreaking discovery of low-frequency gravitational waves that are likely from a supermassive black hole that creates ripples in the fabric of space-time. I said the fabric of space-time, which, of course, we know exists. Well, they said it's likely, so... They closely observed pulsars shooting beams of radio waves out from their magnetic poles, and these beams sweep across the sky, appearing from our vantage point on Earth as rhythmic pulses or radio waves. The pulses arrive on Earth like a perfectly timed metronome, said the scientists. So over the 15 years of analysis, the collision of massive cosmic bodies may have disrupted the arrival of the pulsars, indicating there may be ripples of gravitational waves, possibly suggesting that they may be interfering with the fabric of space-time. All right. Anyway, this is all. You know that a black hole has never been observed? Did you guys know that? Never been observed. We don't know that there are black holes. Anyway, I'll leave it at that. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.